Welcome back to the Deep Dive. It is Tuesday, February 10th, 2026. And, you know, looking at the calendar this morning, I had this real moment of vertigo.
Huh?
It feels like the last 12 months have just packed in about a decade's worth of change, especially when you look at, well, how we move around this planet.
It really has been a whirlwind. I mean, if you had told me a year ago that the safest, most high-tech place to be was a hemp farm in the middle of Uganda, I would have laughed you out of the room.
Right. Exactly. And yet here we are. That is precisely what we are unpacking today. We're looking at a company with a name that is, well, let's be honest, it's a mouthful. Digital Adventures Outdoors Are Us.
They go by Diceris.
Diceris.
Yeah, which, let's be fair, it sounds like a defunct toy store from the 90s.
It really does. Or maybe like a generic camping outlet you'd find in a strip mall.
Totally.
But we have their internal archives here on the desk, specifically a timeline called The Year We Went Off Grid, their Project Octagon blueprints, and some blog posts that just dropped this morning.
And let me tell you, this is not a camping store.
Not even close. This looks like the blueprint for a new type of civilization.
And that is not hyperbole. Mm. We're tracking a pivot from, you know, a simple, struggling ecotourism company into what they're now calling the experience layer of a sovereign infrastructure network.
It's a wild story.
Of survival and really reinvention.
So for everyone listening, here's the mission for this deep dive. We're going to figure out how a travel company decided the world was broken and, well, just built a new one.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about zero trust security, turning luxury resorts into industrial power plants, and why your next vacation might involve managing a crypto mining rig.
It is the ultimate convergence of like leisure and heavy industry. And it all starts with realizing that the old way of doing things was completely burned out.
Okay, let's start there. The old world. The source material kicks off in January 2025. Back then, this company was operating under a different name, Reboot Ecotours.
Right, Reboot.
And reading their logs. It's painful. It's relatable, but it's painful.
It really captures the friction of what travel was like back in early 2025. You know the drill, right? You book this eco-friendly trip, you fly on a massive jet, you land, and then the nightmare begins.
Oh, the apps that don't load, the QR codes you have to scan for everything, the intrusive identity checks.
They call it digital friction. And I think we've all felt that. You just want to get to your room after a 14-hour flight, but you're stuck in the lobby, downloading some loyalty app with one bar of signal, trying to remember your password.
It's the worst.
Right. But for Reboot, the problem was deeper than just annoyance. Their internal memos talk a lot about this idea of carbon guilt.
Mm.
They realized that traditional ecotourism was basically just damage control.
Yeah.
You're shipping people into fragile ecosystems, burning all this jet fuel, and then you give them a metal straw and call it green.
It felt performative.
It was performative. And the data show their customers felt it too. The status quo section of the archive, it shows this massive dip in customer satisfaction in early 2025.
People were burned out on the hypocrisy of it.
Exactly. They wanted an escape, but the escape just felt like more of the same broken system.
So the business is failing. The model is broken. And then we get to August 2025. The Kabong Blueprint. This is the pivot point.
This is where the story gets really good. They send a dispatch from the Karamoja sub-region of Uganda. Now, historically, this is a very remote, very rugged area.
Right.
But they weren't building a safari lodge. They were building what they called a sovereign node.
Explain that term to me, sovereign node, because it sounds a little bit like a survivalist compound.
Well, it shares some DNA with that, certainly, but it's much more sophisticated. A sovereign node, in their definition, is a location that is entirely self-sufficient.
Self-sufficient in what way?
In power, water, and connectivity.
Hmm.
It doesn't rely on the national grid. It doesn't rely on the local ISP. It is, for all intents and purposes, an island of infrastructure.
And the key to this, the thing that blew my mind in the reading, was the power source. Because usually off-grid means what? Solar panels?
Solar panels and just praying it doesn't rain for 3 days. And solar is intermittent. You need batteries, and batteries are heavy, expensive, they degrade. So Diceris went a totally different route. They partnered with a group called Agridot Energy to install plasma gasification units.
Okay, we need to pause on plasma gasification. I feel like I hear this term thrown around in tech circles, but what is actually happening inside that machine?
So, put simply, it's not burning. Incineration is burning. That's dirty. It creates smoke and ash. Plasma gasification uses an electrical arc to create extreme heat. We're talking temperatures hotter than the surface of the sun.
Yeah.
Inside a sealed vessel.
Wow.
And when you throw biomass into that, in this case, waste from their 7,000-acre hemp farm, the heat is so intense it doesn't burn the material. It literally rips the molecules apart.
It molecularly disassociates the hemp.
Precisely. It turns solid waste into a synthetic gas, or syngas, and then they use that gas to run a turbine and generate electricity.
So let me get this straight. You are staying at a luxury lodge. The air conditioning, the lights, the high-speed Wi-Fi, it's all being powered by the leftover stocks from the hemp farm next door.
It is a closed loop. The farm creates the waste creates the power, and the power runs the lodge. And because plasma gasification runs 24/7, unlike solar, they have what we call baseload power.
Which means?
It means steady, industrial-grade electricity in the middle of the African bush.
That is the game changer. That's the difference between, you know, glamping and actually building a city.
And that's what allowed them to launch the Ka Bang expedition.
Mm-hmm.
It proved you could have a high-fidelity experience, meaning luxury and high-tech, without ever touching the national grid.
But you can't have a high-tech experience if you're still using that old-world software. We talked about the friction of apps and QR codes. So in November 2025, they released a manifesto called The Death of the QR Code.
Thank goodness for that. I think we can all agree the QR code had a good run, but it's time to go.
Seriously. And they replaced it with something called radio frequency fingerprinting, or RFF. Now, is this just another version of Bluetooth?
It's distinct. Think of it as like a physical voice print for your hardware. Every electronic device, your phone, your smartwatch, it has these tiny microscopic manufacturing imperfections in its radio transmitter.
Okay.
No two are exactly alike, just like fingerprints. RFF listens to the analog signal your phone puts out and identifies it based on those unique imperfections.
So it's not checking a password. It's not asking me to log in.
Nope. It's checking the physics of the device in your pocket. They call it zero trust access.
Zero trust always sounds so negative to me. Like, we don't trust you.
It's funny, but in security terms, it's actually the highest form of safety. Zero trust means the system assumes everyone is a threat until proven otherwise.
Right.
But because RFF is passive, it just scans your device's signature as you
yeah.
walk by, it feels totally indelible to you, the user.
So the example they give these pilot explorers, they just walk up to a vehicle and the door opens.
Right. No fumbling for keys, no opening an app, no waiting for a server to handshake. The car just senses the radio fingerprint of your watch, confirms it's authorized, and pops the lock. It's seamless.
It removes the friction, but actually increases the security.
Exactly.
Which brings us to the vehicles themselves, because now we are moving into the second major document here, Project Octagon. This is the scale-up. This is where they stop being a travel company and start looking like a utility.
Project Octagon is incredibly ambitious. The document describes a planetary network of 8 of these sovereign nodes. But the language shifts here. They stop talking about tourists and start talking about extreme digital nomadism.
Extreme digital nomadism? It sounds like an Olympic sport.
It essentially is. They're targeting the modern explorer who cannot afford to be offline. The mission statement uses the phrase Black Start Hospitality.
I looked that up. Black Start is a utility term, isn't it? It's the procedure for rebooting a power grid after a total collapse.
Precisely. And that's the selling point. They are saying, the world is volatile. Traditional grids are fragile. Our nodes are designed to survive a total collapse. It's a bunker you'd actually want to vacation in.
Let's break down the pillars of this Project Octagon, because they list 3 distinct technologies that make this possible. The first one is the Sovereign Concierge using the A2A protocol.
A2A stands for agent to agent. We're seeing this explosion in AI right now, and this protocol allows your personal AI agent to talk directly to the company's AI agent.
So I'm not booking the flight.
You're not even looking at the schedule. Your agent knows you want to go to Uganda. It negotiates the visa. It books the connections, handles the payments, and it verifies your identity with the day officer's agent. By the time you wake up, the itinerary is just sitting in your calendar.
It handles all the bureaucracy.
All of it. So you don't have to.
That sounds like heaven. But let's talk about the second pillar, because this is where the economics come in. Power that never blinks. We talked about plasma gasification, but the expert note in the file mentions something interesting. Render farms and crypto mining.
This is crucial. If you are generating massive amounts of electricity in the middle of nowhere using plasma gasification, you can't exactly export it back to the grid. There is no grid. So what do you do with the excess power?
You have to use it on site.
You compute.
Yeah.
Deosaurus installed data centers, that's node 4 in the diagram, right next to the power plants. So during the day, when the guests are out on safari and power usage in the rooms is low, the surplus energy is routed into mining Bitcoin or rendering 3D video for movie studios.
So the hotel is a money printer.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah.
It monetizes the waste energy, and this allows them to subsidize the cost of the travel. It's a brilliant economic model. You aren't just a hotel. You're an industrial computation hub.
That completely reframes the whole idea of remote work. I usually think of remote work as a compromise. You know, I'm at the beach. Sorry, the Zoom call is lagging.
Right. This flips the script. They're saying the city has rolling blackouts. The city has congested bandwidth. We have industrial baseload power and a tier one data center.
Which leads to the third pillar, connectivity. They call it the Trifi wireless mesh.
Trifi? Yeah, it's a cute name for a really robust system.
Yeah.
It stands for the three layers of their digital dome. Layer one is Starlink satellite internet.
Okay.
Layer two is long-range terrestrial radio, so towers beaming signals across the savannah. And layer three is the local mesh. The device is just talking to each other.
And this creates a seamless dome of connectivity.
Yes. They claim you can stream 4K video while you're sitting in a Jeep watching elephants. The source says connectivity is treated as a human right within the node.
Speaking of the Jeeps, we have to mention the Curb Cars. I love the name. That sounds like a 90s grunge band.
It does, doesn't it? But these are serious machines, the Curb Cars Adventure Fleet. These are autonomous rovers, but the key feature is that they act as mobile power stations.
So the car is a battery on wheels.
Exactly. It's the last mile link.
Yeah.
If you drive 2 hours away from the lodge, the car itself extends the digital dome. It relays the signal. And it has enough stored power to run your equipment, charge your drones, or even power a small camp for days.
It's a mobile node.
Correct. You are never actually disconnected unless you choose to be.
So we have the power, the access, the connectivity, the transport. It's a totally closed loop. But then in December 2025, the corporate structure changes. And this is where the philosophy gets really interesting.
They became a DAO.
Right. Digital Adventures Outdoors, our U.S. Steris, officially became a decentralized autonomous organization.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for the listener who might vaguely know what a DAO is, usually it implies a bunch of people on the internet voting on things. How does this apply to a physical travel company?
Think of it like a co-op on steroids.
Mm-hmm.
In a traditional co-op, members own a share. In a DAO, that ownership is programmed directly into the blockchain. They invited their legacy clients, the people who survived the reboot era, to convert their travel credits into governance tokens.
So instead of a voucher for a free night, I get a vote on how the company runs.
You become a sovereign steward. That's the term they use. It aligns the incentive. If you own part of the network, you want the network to be robust. You want the power to stay on. You want the food to be good. You aren't a customer anymore. You are a co-owner of the infrastructure.
It's almost like citizenship.
It's very close to citizenship. And that leads us to the blog post from today, February 10th, The Global Crisis of Trust.
This was a heavy read. It stepped away from travel entirely and looked at global supply chains.
It's the organic coffee problem, right? You buy coffee that says fair trade or organic.
Mm-hmm.
How do you actually know it's true? You're trusting a sticker. You're trusting a self-report from the producer.
And the blog post argues that that trust is just broken.
It says audit models are antiquated. Sending a guy with a clipboard once a year to a farm just isn't proof. So Deisrus is proposing trust as a service, or TAS.
How do you sell trust as a service?
You use the infrastructure we just talked about. Because they have the RFF sensors, the plasma power data, and the blockchain governance, they can cryptographically prove the provenance of anything produced in their node.
So if I buy hemp fiber from the Kabong node,
you can see the exact moment the energy was generated to process it. You can see the RF signature of the machine that harvested it. You don't have to trust the company. You trust the code. The chain of custody is mathematically unbreakable.
That is huge. They are basically saying, we solved this for our little travel network, but this is actually a solution for the whole world's supply chain.
Exactly. And to run a system that complex, you need a new kind of employee. This is the final piece of the puzzle, the Sovereign Power Technician, or SPT.
I loved the description of this role, blue-collar AI engineers.
It's a brilliant rebranding of the workforce. We're always terrified that AI is going to steal blue-collar jobs. Deisrus is saying, no, we need a bridge. We need someone who can fix a diesel generator and code a smart contract.
Bridging diesel and data.
That's the tagline. Imagine a technician in coveralls. In one hand, they have a wrench to tighten a valve on the plasma gasifier. And in the other hand, they have a tablet where they are optimizing the mining rig's hash rate.
It's a hybrid skill set. You have to get your hands dirty, but you also have to understand the digital layer.
And importantly, they're doing this in a post-grid environment. These people are the architects of the new decentralized world. It's a high-value, high-skill job that can't be automated away because it interacts with the physical world.
It really feels like we've watched a complete metamorphosis here. We started with a company struggling to run eco-tours, and we ended up with a blueprint for a sovereign society.
It's the evolution from Reboot, which was just trying to fix the old broken model, to Daufris, which is building a new model entirely. They stopped trying to plug into the grid and decided to become the mesh.
The experience layer of the, what do they call it, the dereticular ecosystem.
That's the fancy term they use. But simpler put, it's autonomy.
It is. And for you listening, maybe you're sitting in traffic or maybe you're in a city where the power flickered last week. This matters because for the last 5 years, we've been told that going off grid means dropping out. It means suffering.
Right. Eating beans by candlelight.
Exactly. But Daceris is proving that off grid can actually mean better connected. It can mean more reliable power. It's not a compromise anymore. It's a premium upgrade.
That's the takeaway for me. The wilderness now has better infrastructure than the metropolis.
It's a staggering thought.
It really is.
And I want to leave everyone with this provocation, just something to chew on as you go about your day. If these sovereign nodes, these places in the bush, are becoming the only locations with guaranteed power, guaranteed food security, and zero trust safety, have the definitions flipped?
Is the city now the fragile wilderness?
And is the middle of nowhere actually the new center of civilization?
I think the map is being redrawn as we speak.
A massive thanks to the archives of Daceris for opening their files to us. And thank you for diving deep. We'll see you on the next one.